the regular meeting of the Community Service Committee. Councilmembers present, Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Shelton, Councilman Bell, Councilman Street, Council President Kovak, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Redder, my legislative aide is Nakai Trailer, I'm Councilman Hollins.
I'm here.
Will we take a minute to approve the minutes from the meeting of November 22nd?
Motion to approve.
All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes from the meeting of November 22nd are adopted. The next item on the agenda is the library capital projects review. The general manager, Marcus Henry.
Marcus Cook is a good one, too.
That works for me.
We're going to leave the room on Marcus.
That's Marcus Cook. That's the name.
Sure referred to.
The general manager will bring us updates on the Claymont Library.
Wow.
The Bear Library, the 913 Carter, and the Wilmington Library. Councilman Powers has joined us. Where is he?
That's the new haircut that guy.
He's got a tie on. Nobody recognizes him.
It's all yours.
Thank you, Chairman Hollins. I'll start with my progress to date for the Claymont Library. Currently, we've received approval as of just about a week and a half ago, DLDOT approval for the completion of Lenape Way. That's the crescent road that's going to service both Darley Green and Access for the new Claymont Library. We did receive DLDOT approval for that. We have a final presentation to present to the Claymont DRAC on January 25th. We tentatively have a groundbreaking ceremony scheduled for this March that I'll update council once that's finalized, obviously. Our final construction documents are expected to be completed the week of January 3rd, which is next week. And the Friends Group capital campaign is underway, as you remember, they're to raise about $750,000 to support this project, and so far doing a very good job. And we're still scheduled to open this new library June of 2013.
Very well. Any questions on Claymont? Councilman Weiner?
Yes. Marcus, will there be opportunity for citizens to have the walking experience as between our county park and the library?
You know, obviously, we're looking at that, but I don't think it's going to be part of this budget or this actual budget for the library, but I think we're going to look at that because I think the points are well-founded for a linkage standpoint for other facilities in and around, but we can't link it up with the project budget, unfortunately.
Okay.
Okay, but thank you.
Thank you.
Bear Library. The library closed to the public at the end of December. The Kirkwood and Newark libraries have each added an additional day of service to meet the needs of these displaced Bear patrons. Appaquimetic had already added 5 hours of public service in September, and I've had two staff redeployed at Appaquimetic to help with any kind of overflow. Full-time staff and all part-time staff wanting to work, the part-time staff, which was most of them, there were a few that chose not to work during this period, have been redeployed to the following library locations. As I said, Appaquimetic, Brandywine 100, Ellesmere, Garfield Park, Kirkwood, Newark, and Woodlawn.
Can I entertain a question here for Councilman Shelton?
Yes, General Manager,
yes,
what days are for Newark and for Kirkwood Highway that are now open? You said they were open an extra day?
Yes.
Did I hear that right? Can you throw out a nightline?
7 days a week now.
It's open seven days a week, okay. All right.
Councilman Street, then Councilman Weiner.
The key word for me in your presentation in terms of employees was all, and then those who want it. Thank you very much.
You got it, sir.
Councilman Weiner?
Thank you. The Brandywine Branch Library, what day is it closed?
It was Thursday, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
It was closed Thursday. It's now be open on Thursdays, correct?
No, it was not impacted.
Oh, I did. Yeah. So, okay.
It was not one of the libraries that were foreseen to be directly impacted. So, therefore, its closed day will remain the same.
Thursday?
Yes, sir.
Thursday. Well, not that that's optimal, but if there has to be day closed, that's certainly better, particularly with students having to work weekends to get papers ready.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The Bear Library is scheduled to reopen in late September 2012. As I've mentioned before, the focus of the renovation is more on the front end of the building, which includes the entrance, vestibule, the bathrooms, the meeting rooms, and children's area. I will give a presentation to council, I should say the architect will, at the next community services meeting in February.
Councilman Smalley?
I had raised this before because there's a lot of seniors in that area. And I was, so if we could keep an eye on this and keep in touch with the Department of Elections as to whether it will be viable to have that reopened as a polling place prior to September 11th is the primary. So if it's possible for the sake of those, because there are a lot that, quite honestly, wheelchair, walk, whatever, to that library and to the polling place when it's there.
And even if construction's not complete, it still may be a possibility. Yeah, and it could very well be done earlier than that, but we'll keep in touch with the Board of Elections.
I mean, those electeds that use that have received notice from the Department of Elections of potential relocation of polling place to Del Dot. But if at all possible, if we could stay in touch with them. And
I'll be sure
I'm not sure what their time frame is to know that, but
okay.
We could.
Sure.
Thank you.
I had, as Chairman Hollins mentioned, I have a few other updates. We'll progress. Public computers at Garfield Park. We're in the process of installing 15 new public computers at the Garfield Park Library. We're actually going to have a kickoff event for this in February that I'll contact council about. We're working with the new Friends of the Garfield Park Library to plan this event. So we're excited about that new service to offer to the residents of computer usage at Garfield Park Library. It does involve a library card registration initiative to kind of keep it organized so that they register as a library patron to use the new service. But we're very happy to offer that for this community.
Councilman Street.
Thank you.
I'd like to also mention the Wilmington Library. That's the main library that services the city of Wilmington. It's not ours. They're a contract library. They're scheduled soon to actually close for a 17-month major capital renovation. During this period, they're going to temporarily relocate at One Customs House Square, 704 King Street. That'll be on the third floor, and I think it's about 14,000 square feet they'll be utilizing. I understand that's under contract already. Also, like
Councilman Weiner?
I'm sorry, yes. just, it's an opportunity to remind those present, including the public, that folks that live in the city of Wilmington are county citizens, and although they pay a prorated portion of county services, it's directly connected by nexus to the services that we provide, most importantly EMS and library. I'll defer to the council persons if there are other services, but those are the two that come to mind.
I went through a laundry list of those services just last night at the City Democratic Committee, and I try to do that, and whenever I have an engagement before city residents, that Jerry Kelly was there, Councilman Street was there, and others, but I always go to Ed to get information, as well as to Marcus to make certain that the city residents recognize and appreciate the services that we provide by the commitment that we have directed from the state, as well as what we do through CDBG and so forth and other services. So they know all of those things from the grants that we gave, at least the people who are at these meetings. We keep them abreast of that and what it means, the relationship with the service for the paramedics, as well as the service for the libraries, other grants, the service that we did provide, like maintenance of the park, we no longer do. So we've sort of gone through that. But thank you. We do it routinely. Thank you, Councilman Street.
And the other side of that is, which I repeatedly say, and I'll say it again since you started it, you know, the shootings in the city just don't impact the city alone. Because every time somebody gets shot, it's our paramedics over there trying to save the life. So that's important to note as well.
Good point. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. For libraries, I'll end with, we're going to start a library needs assessment for the Route 913 corridor. The needs assessment process will begin in February with library consultant Bill Wilson, who has expertise in urban library services. The process will include outreach to library staff and interested individuals from Bear, Newcastle, Garfield Park, and Wilmington libraries. And this area we're talking about is directly in between the service area of both Wilmington and Newcastle, the town. But we see the strong need in the near future, the very near future, to offer library service for this area. And hopefully that'll end up us doing an acquisition and new library service for this area. So this assessment will help to make that determination.
Very well.
Okay.
Any further questions on libraries? Councilman Cartier.
I just want to say I'm highly supportive of the Route 9 corridor project and the projected library facility, and I'd be willing to lend my support to that. I think that's a very much underserved area, and we need to put a library facility there.
Item 4 on the agenda is CDBG home proposal process. General Manager.
Thank you, Chairman. The fiscal year 13 funding cycle for the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Program, and Emergency Shelter Grant, which is now being retitled the Emergency Solutions Grant, will cover the periods between July 1, 2012 and June 30, 2013. Our department began the application process on November 14, 2011 with our annual kickoff meeting. There were 75 people in attendance representing various agencies throughout the state. The applications for funding were due on December 20th. For fiscal year 13, 67 applications for funding were received. The requests were broken down in the following categories. For community development block grant funds, we received 51 applications for the amount totaling over $1 million. For home investment partnership funds, we received 6 applications in amounts requested of over $1.8 million. And for emergency shelter grants, which has now been renamed, we received 10 applications of over $350,000. The total funds requested of all sources was a little over $3.2 million. Unfortunately, the department projects only $1.3 million in funding available for these initiatives.
Question, on the 10 apps for emergency shelter grants has been renamed, how does that compare to the past? That seemed like a high number to emergency shelter grants to me.
In terms of the applications?
Yes.
Yeah. Carrie Casey with the Department of Community Services. We usually receive about 6 to 7 applications. Last year we funded 6, so it is a little bit more than we usually have received in the past. We've had a few new applicants, actually. So yes, we have seen about 4 additional applicants this year.
Then what about the other applications for the other segments of the CDBG? I think you mentioned 51.
51, yeah.
How does that relate to last year or the year before?
Well, last year we received a total of 70. So it's an overall increase of decrease of 3 applications. So we didn't see as many applicants. I think it was right around the 53 that we received in CDBG last year. We got about 8 in home last year, and then again we got 6 with ESG, which we funded all of them. We just split our allocation by that 6. So we saw 3 less in total than from last year. So it's not a huge difference really in the number of applications.
But it bears mentioning that, you know, we have been dialoguing with all the nonprofits and others about these federal reductions that we knew were coming. I think they're aware of that. And we asked them to, you know, it's going to be an extremely competitive process for these awards this year, this fiscal year, because of the challenges we're facing. And I think some have looked at that in terms of, you know, putting forth a very good application. So it's going to be challenging, to say the least, for these initiatives.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Wyden.
Thank you. Can you update us on the current thinking in Washington, D.C. concerning the federal reductions on CBDG? Sorry.
I can't.
CBDG.
Well, as I may have stated before, I think the last meeting, this fiscal year's reduction is about 13%. That's unfortunately on top of the 17% reduction from the previous year. That's pretty much final, and that's what we're dealing with this current allocation. They didn't touch, as we've talked about, the administrative cap, the percentage of that. They left that alone, but in terms of other operating dollars, it's a 13% reduction on top of the 17%. For a home, even worse, a lot worse actually. We saw a 36% reduction in this fiscal year on top of about a 13.5-14% reduction the previous year. That's drastic as hell, and obviously that's been used as leverage funding for multifamily, for other type of rehab repair programs that we've had. So, you know, we have 6 applications. I told you what the numbers look like. We're just not going to be able to fund all of them, unfortunately. ESG was pretty much level funded. There might be a slight increase from what we understand.
Councilman Street.
I'm just going to drive the point home for you as I see it. And we had, you know, everybody saying that what they're doing is not political this year. Well, it's an election year and everything's political. And at the end of the day, you got these fools running around wanting to do away with all the entitlement programs and change this and change that. And when I say the missions are full, we got folks sleeping in parks. If this money goes away, it's just going to be that many more people sleeping on the street, trying to survive any way they can. Crime's automatically going to go up, and we're just a small jurisdiction because these programs are funded all across the country. So when folks stand up and they want to end this and they want to end that, they're literally saying that they contemplate making a change that puts a whole lot of folks on the street, homeless, without shelter. So, I mean, that's the bottom line for me at the end of the day. There's no accident. You've got an increase in application for shelter because nonprofits are having folks come in more and more every day who are seeking shelter and or homeless, on the verge of being homeless, and emergency situations are on the rise. And again, this is, I don't think it's uncommon across the country in terms of the suffering people, especially in major urban areas.
Thank you, Councilman Street. Any other comment on the proposal process?
Just a few more points on that.
I'm sorry.
We have a committee, obviously, it's established every year to review these applications. We started that process. We'll have final draft recommendations to be made for our new HUD annual action plan for fiscal year 13. We anticipate the public comment period to begin in mid-March and have scheduled the public meeting for April 11, 2012. We will notify, obviously, council of the meeting and advertise in the News Journal and the Latino publication La Hoy. And our HUD action plan is due to HUD by May 16, 2012.
Any additional questions? Any questions from the public on the review of the libraries, the progress we're making with our libraries? Seeing none, we will go to Jerry Kelly. We have a special guest. Jerry Kelly is a former Wilmington City Council member. He was also with the Banking Commissioner's Office, and now he's with the Department of Justice, and he's the go-to guy for foreclosures. We had quite a discussion, as council members know, earlier as relates to foreclosures and the county budget forecast. So I'm glad that Jerry was able to come. You're coming at a very timely time so we can continue that conversation with you, Jerry. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nice to be here because we want to update you on what's going on and also you know, fill you in on the new programs that are coming out. And I have staff here, which is, this is the foreclosure outreach group that's put together for the next 2 years. And it's Jane and Margaret Mary will be with me for the next 2 years, trying to reach out to people to make sure they're aware of our office, but also of what they can do when they're in foreclosure. And so it's something that I've been working on now for probably 5 or 6 years since I got State Representative Keeley and people at this table to fund a foreclosure study back in 2007. Because much like you, as a district council member, looking at my neighborhoods and seeing people leave in the middle of the night. And I always used to wonder why they would leave in the middle of the night. And inevitably, it was because they couldn't meet a mortgage payment. And housing counselors came to us and asked, well, what can we do? You know, what can we do to keep them in the house? And one of the reasons for having the foreclosure study was to get one of those recommendations together, which would try to copy the Pennsylvania program, which they called HEMAP. So we stole it and called it DMAP, Delaware Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program, which is still in play, still has $500,000, and is up to $25,000 a loan at 3% for people who fall into foreclosure through no fault of their own. So that's a program that, again, it's one of many programs, state and federal, that are out there, but one that, you know, really was a reason we tried to do that foreclosure study, and it has served us in many ways. Anytime someone's interested in DMAP and they come to us, they may not get DMAP, but they'll get help in some other way. So we try to make sure that people are aware of that. So the first thing I want to do today is go through data, update you on some data that's out there. Some of it is reliable, some of it is good, some of it not so reliable, but I give it to you just to clarify some points. The first thing is the sheriff's sales in Newcastle County. That's very reliable. That's data that we get from the sheriff's office, 1478 this year. That means more homes that are going to sheriff's sale are going all the way through. And so, you know, usually you would see a lot more homes stayed in the process and it would be stopped. Now you're seeing more homes go through the process. I anticipate that number increasing another 20% this year, going up to more 1,700. But that would be my eyeball thought about that, just because people are running out of options. And people who are in foreclosure now, the average going to sheriff's sale is more getting closer to 2 years. You know, it's definitely a year and a half, but I would say that some, that trend line is going closer to 2 years behind. And when we get the calls from people who are 2 years behind or close there too, it's much harder to find a way to stop that sale. We try, and with new programs coming out, we're also always mindful of the new ideas. And so we do our best to stop the sales. Right now, for the next sheriff's sale, which is sadly on Valentine's Day, February 14th, we have another 350 scheduled, and we already have over 20 requests for stays on the sale. So we're working hard to try to coordinate those properties to see which ones have compelling files that would enable us to work with the attorney and the bank to stay the sale. But you see the trend lines on sheriff sales, and then we took a look at the specific zip codes. And you can see that, you know, the corridor that you were talking about earlier, the Route 9 corridor in Newcastle, certainly has some problems there. 19720 is very difficult, zip code. It's sort of the epicenter of the sheriff's sale crisis. We're having an event February 25th at William Penn High School. We're working with the Colonial School District to get people out to come to that. And it'll be two meetings during the Saturday. We'll be there at 11 and 12:30 talking to residents. And the overview of that meeting is a health fair. Because when you talk to families in foreclosure, it's not just the house. You know, it's their overall health. Because they do take it every day, they take this issue seriously every second, every minute of every day. And I try to, you know, get my old basketball coaching out strategy and tell them to go to four corners and play, try to take your time, because you don't need to call them every day. I say, give it to me for a week, let's see what we can do. But people are rooting their health over their house. And so this meeting at William Penn, the 25th, is to have an overall view of the situation, and also some school issues will be covered there. But, you know, I think it's important to understand that when we get a call, you know, and after 4 or 5 years of doing this, it's like I should get a psychiatric sort of I should get an evaluation, number one. But number two is, you know, you're doing a lot of workouts with the people as far as what's important. We're trying our best to keep families together, but one of the hotline calls is divorce and separation, which is sad, but, you know, the Fannie and Freddie are recognizing that, the two major owners of these portfolios now, and they're doing more work with single individuals who are the one remaining in the house. And this is new to me. I talked to a housing counselor today and learned more and more about what the divorced person can do who's remaining in the house. So I'm a little bit more optimistic when I talk to people in divorce now than I was earlier this month. I was always saying, well, forget about it. But now, in talking to people, there is a new initiative that they're doing to try to get people who are divorced to stay in their homes. So it sometimes goes down to who owns your note. You know, the servicer is fine to know the servicer of your loan, Bank of America, Chase, Citi, whatever. But it's really critical to know who owns your note. The Fannie, the Freddie, the FHA, those are the ones, that's when you get a winning ticket. You know, the VA, winning ticket. But when you get the private investor, the mortgage-backed securities, the MERS, and all that stuff, it doesn't work out as well. It's a much more convoluted experience, one in which accountability is not as readily available. So we like it when we hear a Fannie, Freddie, or an FHA or a VA ownership. We don't like it so much when it's a private investor. But you can see the zip codes 19720, 19805, and 19702. You can see the city of Wilmington being impacted there significantly. And but just when you look at this, you're missing also that the stress that people are under there because of what these foreclosed properties are doing in the neighborhood. When the foreclosed property hits the market, then the market changes to go to that value. And so what that does is put downward pressure on the real estate in that neighborhood, which then, you know, creates more problems for people who then, where their mortgage is equal to the value of their home, that other home going into the marketplace can put them in a position where they're what's called upside down or underwater, where they owe more in the house than it's worth. And so that's another critical variable that we're seeing, especially in throughout the state of Delaware. Some people would estimate 30% of the homes. Sometimes I think it's a little bit higher because of the the closeness that value is. You know, it's not free to go into the market and sell your home. There's a prices for that. But you can see the zip code analysis. Then we turn to the next page. and we get to a total look at the state of Delaware. And this is reliable data again, too. This is from the Mortgage Bankers Association. And the Mortgage Bankers Association, this is 80% of the loan portfolio the Mortgage Bankers Association reports on. So when you look at 20,000 being 88%, you're really talking about 22,000 to 23,000 homes out there that are in distress. And of that pool, 7,000 to 8,000 are in foreclosure, and the remaining 12,000 or so are getting ready to go into foreclosure. You can see the foreclosure filings this year were a little bit down at 4,000. The last 2 years, we've had 6,300, 6,400, and 6,100. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had over 25,000 foreclosure filings. Some of those are duplicative, but it gives you a measure of how much is going on in this marketplace. When you look at the foreclosure filings, you also see that we started mandatory mediation. We'll talk about that in a minute. And on January 18th was the last day to file without mandatory mediation. And we had, I think that day we had about 170, 180 filings across the state, 86 in New Castle County. So the lawyers were very busy that day trying to get everything done before the mandatory mediation program came into play. The next page you see, you always get different data. And this is data that sort of comes from RealityTrack and some of the other people looking at it. But it was the first time I'd seen the state of Delaware in top 10. But it also showed that, you know, I don't trust this data as much as I trusted the ones we just reported on. But it gives you an indication of where we are, that our trend lines are up that high, that we're getting noticed. And that's a troubling aspect of what we're seeing. But some of this national data I'm not as attached to as I am our own data from Newcastle County and the Mortgage Bankers Association. If you return to the timeline for foreclosure, again, what I mentioned earlier was that people going to sheriff sale are more like a year and a half behind, closer to 2 years. When you look at this thing, it used to be 8 or 9 months. And we used to be, you know, we used to be a lot more well-respected in what we did over when I was with the bank commissioner because, you know, I could really do something. And now it's a lot harder because people are so far behind. And so it's a much more difficult process to get into a compelling file that you can help with. However, having said that, though, you have to understand that the major problem today is unemployment, second by health issues. And so there is new programs coming out every day. Fannie and Freddie now have a year forbearance agreement that I think they're announcing this week, where you don't have to make a payment or a minimal payment for a year. FHA already has that in place. So there is a much greater window of time to try to find that job, to try to see what you can do to get the family situation back together again. So we noticed the new programs, but if you see this timeline, what we wanted to show you was where the mediation program is. When the home goes into foreclosure, from now on, when the home goes into foreclosure, they can get due mandatory mediation program. So what we're gonna do is establish a whole new pool of applications. When we're looking at, we want to go back for a second to the foreclosure study. One of the reasons for that study also was to get access to LexisNexis. So we all, you know, my two associates here and I, we have the ability to go to LexisNexis every day and see who's been filed against. And so that was a result of the foreclosure study. We got communication with LexisNexis. But what that does is enable us to target direct marketing. So what we become in our office now is we're going to do direct marketing, mailings, sort of like a campaign for anyone who's run a campaign. We're going to be doing mailings, and the Attorney General also says we're going to be doing door knocking. So those of you who've seen me walk know that I'll be coordinating the door knocking from the corner, but I will not be doing the door knocking directly. But we will be doing door knocking. We're going to, because, you know, that's where they get to look at a face, trust the face, and believe in the program. Because the other side of this is there's a dark cloud that overhangs the foreclosure process all the time, which is the scams. I mean, I just reported this morning about a scam, and it was the third scam. It's a national scam, but they come to us because the P.O. box is local. It's in one of our zip codes. So they're using this P.O. box to, you know, direct the mail there, and then it's forwarded to another state. So we've gone through, we've subpoenaed, we're doing all that. But it's very difficult because these people who do this are so aggressive. I mean, if we had all the money that people have paid for scams in this state and in this county, you guys wouldn't be worrying about a budget problem because it'd be millions and millions of dollars. And it's sad because you talk to the people and they want their money back, and I have to tell them, you know, back, I said, where were you when I was teaching consumer education? You don't pay first. You don't pay people first. You hold your money until they get the job done. At worst, you're going to give them 5%. I mean, even the best contractors at this table, the best workers at this table, I love you. But I'd only give you 3 to 5% up front, maybe another 5% when you got the materials. But people are paying $2,000, $2,500, $3,000, $4,000. And guess who the major culprit is? Guess what profession is the major culprit in all this? What their facade is. Can you guess? Attorneys. You know, it's attorneys throughout this country that are the front on this process, which really, so when I see my four brothers who are attorneys, I always tell them that the educators are not doing it, it's the attorneys. But it is sad.
Just a second, let me yield to one of our attorneys. Councilman Weiner.
Again, I mean, attorneys are very helpful to us, so I'm just saying that that's, you can't, it's like in the old days when you had the nonprofit credit counselors. People use things as a tool to try to get people to give them money, and in the end, it doesn't serve them well.
He has a question, seriously.
Yes, thanks. Let me just preface it by saying lawyers are people, too.
I love lawyers. I do. But, you know, the problem is that people respect them so much, they'll give them money up front.
Right.
And what the point is don't give people money up front. You have free advice all over the state. We're going to have open houses throughout the state. So please, you know, we're trying to get people to make sure they come for open houses. The timeline, I want to talk about three things about this timeline. The timeline is a long timeline. Certain points here. When the sheriff sale occurs, that's the end for the people in the mortgages, as far as there is no redemption period. For tax sales, you do have a 60-day redemption period. But you still get to stay in the house. Even after this long process, you're in the house, the sheriff sale occurs. There's still a process, a state process, a writ of possession to get you out of that house. So you don't have to get out of the house, usually for a few months. And it's at that point when you're in the house that you'll be offered cash or keys. So, you know, there is a reason to be in that house and to stay in that house to see what the lender will offer you. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, but if you're living in that house and it goes to sheriff's sale, there's still time period to stay in the house. So you just want to make sure people know about that. But we list the programs on there that are available at different points in time, and it's a good look at what's available. The mediation program, the mandatory mediation program, that first time that you get the papers from the attorney's office, that's when the mandatory mediation program becomes available. And then you can apply for it. We have the brochure here for the mediation program. And the reason the Attorney General wanted to do this, and the reason the governor had done it previously on a voluntary basis, was to get people to sit down together and talk. It's not fun getting those files the 2 weeks before the sheriff's sale. Hopefully this program will stop that from occurring if we can get the people to sit together and talk about the issues. There's a process in here to do it. It's available to anyone who is living in their own house, 1-4 unit in Delaware, and had their mortgage foreclosed upon on or after January 19, 2012. The important thing is to reach out to a housing counselor and start the process at that juncture. So with this new mediation program, your house, if you qualify, you'll have a mediation program, mediation conference scheduled, and that will be 75 days or so after the foreclosure filing. And up to that point in time, you can come to the mediation conference and sit down and talk to your lender. It's better to get everything to them prior to the conference. It's better to apply for it as soon as you can. Sure.
Jerry, who is sponsoring or paying for the mediation program? Are these voluntary mediators, or are they paid?
Once the process begins, the bank is going to pay $500. So the bank will be supporting this initiative through a fee that they would pay through their attorney's office. Hopefully that money will support the housing counselors and all the other costs that go with the program.
And who is mediating? Who will be the mediators?
The housing counselors will be there. There'll be a mediator through the Delaware Legal Aid Council. Volunteer Legal Aid will have mediators, voluntary mediators available. You have to go through the mediation process in Superior Court to be a mediator. But we seem to have a good amount right now. We're always looking for more. Housing counselors, of course, are going to be, people are going to be working hard on this process, but it's not going to be perfect or pretty from the beginning. So people have to know our numbers to call us. And I always give out my number, 577-5092, to people who come to us. And if they're really anxious, I give them my cell phone. But, you know, that's, you know, that's common too out there. But you know, we just try to make sure people are able to know different resources, because housing counselors are going to be over on, are going to be on the spot. We're going to be on the spot, and then just having these meetings. The county has been gracious enough to give us the space at the Gilliam Center, so we're trying to make sure that we have a lot of free spaces available, free for us, and collaborating with the government. But something where the cost can go and support the housing counselors that are going to be needed for this program.
So, Jerry, are you done with your presentation?
Just I want to, two things that I just want to
mention. Okay, go right ahead. Take your time.
I'm sorry. The open houses that we're having, they're going to be February 8th at the Wilmington City Council chambers at noon. February 9th, we're going to be in the Gilliam Community Room over at the County Government Center at noon, and also again at 6 o'clock. So to the extent, the big ask here is for people to really, you know, spread the word on these meetings. And we'll have the meetings every 5 or 6 weeks. We'll be out there. We're going to have the servicers come back in on March 30th and 31st to meet with people directly, and we'll be just starting the mediation program. So there's a lot of opportunity to meet with us. We're going to ask the county, we're meeting with them later this week to talk about, you know, mailings, direct mailings, and working with the people out there to make sure they know about these open houses. I think that's, I've run through two things that you wanted me to mention. In the sheriff sales, you look at a sheriff sale list, you see tax sales, and then you see estate sales. And the purchase, when you go to a sheriff sale, you notice that the investors are there for two reasons usually: tax sales and estate sales. And what we're going to try to do is come up with a strategy for estate sales, because we don't, it's something that I don't like, in that that strips equity out of the minority community, largely, or the lower echelon, the people that don't know how to change an estate into value. And so a lot of times it's the lower middle class, the people who don't have the wherewithal to settle an estate. I just got off the phone with someone whose father died in 2004. She's trying to keep the house, but it's now 2012. You know, you've been paying the mortgage, but she does not have the same rights as someone who would own the house. She can't get the modifications that she could get. So there's a lot of sticking points that we try to get them to go to resources to do it. Estate sales are tough, and the other ones are tax sales, but we see less of those, but we are trying to keep our eye on them to make sure people know. Because when you see the foreclosure sheriff sale list, you'll see, you know, I had one leader of a civic group I used to go to a lot, and his was up for sale for $800. And so, you know, it's just not, there's something there that's missing. And it's something I know the city has to think about a lot, but you know, we just want to make sure we reach out to residents to know what they can do. And the last point on the estate sales, just a teaching point that I learned this year, so I always like to let people know that in an estate sale, anyone who has an equitable interest in that sale can stop the sale by declaring bankruptcy. You know, and so it's a point where if you have a huge, there's only so many reasons why to declare bankruptcy. And one of them is to stop a sheriff sale if you really love the house and you have no other options. And so bankruptcy can stop the sale on an estate sale. If you have an equitable interest in that property, you can declare bankruptcy. And we've used that for about 10 to 12 properties since I learned that little tidbit in June of last year. So that was very helpful to the bankruptcy attorney, good attorney, who taught me that. So thank you, legal community, for that one. So thank you. That's all, I guess.
Councilman Weinern and President Kovac and Councilman Powers.
Thank you. You've come with a lot of information. Thank you very much. And I know this may not be your bailiwick, but I'm frustrated, as I'm sure every person is in this room. About twice a week, we all get a phone call from Florida saying, you know, you need to call us right away. And then when you call and you try to talk to someone, then they hang up on you. Isn't it possible for the Department of Justice to do anything about this regular scam that's been going on now for years?
You know, it's like, you know,
this predatory practice.
We're trying our best. I mean, the resources of the federal government and the state government. We're, you know, that's why I keep forwarding these emails to Kevin Carroll, the head of Consumer Protection, and to Jose.
But this is a phone call that we all get twice a week.
Yeah, well, just let me know about it. It's hard because, you know, that's frustrating to all of us, because we cannot get residents to realize that the best help is one they have to do. It's not going to come to them. The best help, they're going to have to reach out to someone who's noteworthy, or someone who has the housing counselor, someone who they can trust. And unfortunately, people will pay money to get this problem to go away. because they see it ruining their family, they see it ruining things. And if someone calls who has the, you know, whether it's saying they're an Esquire, saying they're this, people are paying money for that. And there's, you know, we are trying to chase those dollars around the country. The, you know, it's more of a Washington level investigation. We can do it from our perspective, and we did. And we searched the P.O. box, we searched that, and then it's out in California. Sometimes I have dreams of going out there and settling the score. But it's unfortunately, that vigilante justice can only serve so little. But people have to realize to keep the money in their pocket, and we can't. You know, every day there's a scam, depending on what the needs are. People will go to that scam. And the issue of the day is foreclosure, and there's just so many scams in it. That's why we're trying to be accessible. Anyone who has an issue and they know I'm in the office can come up to the sixth floor. And, you know, my number is direct, 577-5092. My cell is, you know, it's 547-0800. It's pretty easy to remember. Just, you know, but just try to do your best to let them know. And that's what we're trying to do. But we can't, unfortunately, with the integration of these scams into other states, the federal justice has to get involved to help us out, because we can only go to the borders. And we do go out there and try to find these people, but they're not there because they know that we're looking for them, and they're somewhere else. But you know, there are a number of investigations going on, so I hope that they will bring justice to this cause.
President Kovac, and then Councilman Powers.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate the all the information about the various parts of this program. I'm going to ask about the mediation part again, only because it's new.
Right.
We heard earlier today about 300 or so foreclosures a month. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to have to be then 300 mediations. Do you have those mediators in place? That's a lot of hours of mediation. Do you have those folks in place to be able to perform that service? Or are you still looking out to the legal community?
I mean, we're always looking out. I think the way that they're doing it is that you can... we are looking out for more help in all these different areas. But the important thing is that the hard number is 300. The drawdown number is probably like 180 to 200. A lot of these homes are second homes. They don't qualify. Investor homes will not qualify. So the files that will be, you know, the ones that we're going to door knock on are the places where the people live there, and it's their home. So we're trying to target ours to the people that can apply, and then we're just going to, it's going to be a slower process. It's going to be I think that's why you saw all those attorneys' files, because they know it's going to be a slow process. We don't want it to be, you know, a dragged out process. We want it to be timely and try to resolve. Because when you look at the mediation brochure, there's different choices. Some of the choices are to leave the home, you know, the deed in lieu of foreclosure, the short sale. Some are to stay in the home, because a lot of times the home is causing the problem with the family. So we don't want to see the family break up. We just want to see them move to another area. I mean, there's, you know, it's, you know, I have a, within our governments, our employees, there are so many people in need in this that they just have to know where to go. And the more that we can do it, the more that we can get them in line here, I believe the mediation program will work. It's not going to be pretty in the beginning. It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be a process, and we will help try to streamline, but we will need other help, and I think that it will be, right now, I think we're ready for the beginning. Whether we're ready for the mid-inning relief, I don't know, but we'll be looking at the we'll be looking at it as it goes on to make sure we're doing it the best we can.
Councilman Powers.
Yeah, just a question on really with your outreach open house. Just wondering, what are you looking at in Southern Newcastle County?
If we can, what we'll be doing is Middletown will be a target area, and. You know, as we get into, once we get through these first two meetings on February 9th, we're going to do a whole March schedule meetings, and we will be open. We'll certainly be doing Middletown. We're going to do different areas, and like in Sussex, you have to do Georgetown, but then you'll hit Seaford Laurel, because Seaford Laurel is a huge area of foreclosures. And in our state, we have a real problem in the lower part of the county. And if you have any recommendations, we certainly will be there in March, and we'll do the same.
That's kind of what I'm, not it might have been 4 or 5 years ago in the mansions.
Right. Yes.
It's certainly on.
Right. And you know, we have the same issues in Georgetown and Laurel Seaford, and we certainly will have meetings in March in the Middletown area, and any other areas that you want.
We'd like to know my office.
Okay. That'd be great.
On that same point, do you notice comparable types of foreclosures in the area of Middletown and Lower Delaware?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a hot spot there for foreclosure activity, especially in the, you know, we see more upside-down homes down in that area, more homes with the depreciation. When the market goes down, there are certain areas like in Bear, certain homes that where the market has sort of fallen. And those are very big indicators for us that there's, when people call and they say they already have three or four homes on the street that are going to foreclosure, it presents a bottom of a market that has its real, that has very big problems for us. Because we just, there's, strategic default is not just a word, it's a reality that people see. And something we have to do is when that home value has depreciated so much that the mortgage is so much greater, we don't try to tell people what they have to do. We just try to become a sounding board of what their options are, mm-hmm. and to give them the advice of where they have to go to get that.
Councilman Powers and Councilman Street.
Yes. The hard thing for a lot of these people is they bought the house in a subdivision, which really might not have been that expensive, which is now $100,000 less than builder's building.
Right.
And it's exactly what you're saying. Is they came in and maybe spent $250,000, $300,000, and now it's $180,000.
And when I get to those discussions, I try to tell people that, you know, there's a lot of that. Everyone's lost value, and to try to just see what they can do if they want to stay in the home and what their options are to stay in the home and what they can look at. You know, there is a new program. There's a HARP. Housing, you know, the refinancing program the federal government has. I've seen mixed reviews from the HARP program, refinancing mortgages that are upside down so that we can at least bring their rate down to 4.5 or so. We've had mixed success with that as far as any federal government program we've had mixed success with, I would say at this point. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. And we try to work with them as best we can. But the HARP program is one in which you can refinance if you're upside down. But I can't say that I haven't gotten a few complaints on that. So we're trying to let people know it exists. Whether it's a reality is the details just came out a little while ago for the program, but it's certainly something for people who are upside down to consider. But like everything else, it seems hard to get to the final, to get to the goal line.
Councilman Street, let me just say that we're getting close to the time. We have another agenda item on the agenda. And I don't want to push into, so we're going to have to keep our questions and our answers pretty much.
And I'll be happy to come back at any time.
I think we can do it. I just want to be mindful of the time, and we haven't given the public a chance yet to ask questions. I'm certain that at least Nancy has a question. Councilman Street.
Well, I don't have any questions. I just want to thank you for everything that you have done. And the fact of the matter is, you know, you've worked as hard as anybody that I know with all the things that you do. And before we had the program, you were the only game in town, you were the primary person in town, outstanding negotiating skills, very aggressive and assertive on behalf of people, with bankers and decision makers. And I know my office and the people that come to me had nowhere else to go. And I don't know what this number would be if you weren't involved. So I appreciate your commitment, your dedication, your skills, and all your work and anything that we can do as a council to help and support him. I think we need to do everything we can possibly think of to be supportive of this man and his dad in their efforts, because they're truly making a difference. And they had, and you see what he does. I mean, he gives his office number, his home number, his cell number, and you call it, he answers. So, you know, he needs help, program needs help, and I think we
Jay, I need a lot of help.
I just think I would be totally remiss knowing that from personal experiences and how he's intervened and made a difference. I just had to take the time to say publicly thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you, staff. Thanks. They're trying to get me organized, so they didn't know what they got themselves into.
Thank you, Councilman Street. I sanction those comments. I think we all are very grateful for the service that you're providing. It's certainly something that is in great need, and certainly need more help. But you've been there from day one when we tried to get DMAP together. I remember those days, so I really appreciate all you've done over the years and continue to do and your commitment to this. And I may add that you even came to my church to be part of a seminar to bring people, educate them in regard to their finances and homeownership and those kinds of things. So you take it wherever people will ask you to come. I really appreciate that. Any other comment from, question from members of the county council? Seeing none, we'll give the public a chance. I think Nancy's been waiting for a while.
I was glad I earmarked
your
it.
Name.
Nancy Willing from New York. The idea that there will be door knockers was good to hear because I was very patiently waiting through the legislation and the discussions in the past year, and that was missing. And but they were citing the successes of Philadelphia and of Connecticut, and both of them concluded an active boots on the ground outreach program. The Delaware for Social and Economic Justice did the pilot study for the Delaware Housing Authority as outreach workers, and so those were good jobs for a lot of city people, and so Delaware County. So I was just hoping that in your that the help that you'll be getting and coordinating for that for door knocking, that some of the people that are experienced at doing that will be put to work to do that. Do you have a contract bid for that, or?
Right now the Attorney General has reached out to a number of organizations as far as colleges and universities and looking at different ways to get the people on the ground to make sure that it's working, and we're examining the different studies that have been done on door knocking right now. And we're gonna, right now my fear was the data. My first fear was to make sure I had the data because I didn't want to go door knocking. I door knocked, you know, back in the younger days of my life, and I always had good data. But we got to make sure the data is there, reliable, and timely, and that's the first thing, and that's what I'm focusing on. Once I'm satisfied that that's addressed, then I'm going to go.
The data for the door knocking is there. It's in the federal website. It shows that
I'm just talking about LexisNexis tapping.
The data that you go to when you go.
So we're just making sure we have our ducks in a row. And that's
maybe I can give you a call.
Yeah, please, anytime, 577-5092. That's a good number.
Any further comment, question from any member of the public? Seeing none, thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank
appreciate
you for your
being
time.
Here.
Thank you so much.
The final item on the agenda is agenda item number 6. We have Rich Pizarro here. I beg your pardon? You want to introduce him?
Actually.
I beg your pardon?
Can I introduce him, please?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thanks. I'd like to introduce Rich Brizoire, president of Newcastle County Pride. Rich has worked in my office the past year. We greatly appreciate his assistance. We've had two grant workshops that have been extraordinarily well received for our friends of the library group, thanks to Rich. You guys know Rich, and he's been a chief of staff, a general manager. He's been a major benefit. He really helped Newcastle County government. I appreciate that. So thank you.
Joining me is going to be Alex Meisler, who's the treasurer. So if there's any particular questions. Got a brief update to give you, but I thought, since we have some new council members, we'd do just a quick overview, cognizant of the time. You have another committee meeting after this. Just to remind you, Newcastle County Pride is a separate 501c3. It's not under control of Newcastle County. It's got a volunteer board, small board, working board. There are no paid staff members of the board or executive directors, and none of the volunteers like myself or Alex receive any compensation in any way for the service on the board. And also, as an ethical firewall between Newcastle County Pride, no member of the board can be a county official or state official to avoid any potential conflict of interest. So those people who are on the board all have no role in state, county, or municipal government. So for new members, council president and council member, just to make sure you understand how the operation is. So what I thought I'd do is give you, we have been doing some volunteer work, working with the department to put on the two workshops here. They were 3-hour training sessions, probably had 50 organizations and individuals at each training session. And basically it was a how to find money for your nonprofit. How do you fundraise? Is it in corporate money? Is it individual money? Where can you find for your grassroots effort or your larger, the Friends of Rockwood were there, different library groups. And we've been very candid with them about, you know, raising money helps your destiny. If the Friends want to make improvements at Rockwood, then they need to go out and find new money, not turn to grant and aid program and county programs to look for those renovations. The money is out there. In this economy, it's tough, but you can fundraise out there. So I think we are very happy with both of the training sessions. And clearly, some people came to both. So they enjoyed the first one, and they came back for more training. So I think the first thing to do is give you an update on the balances of the accounts. And if you recall, what we do is we work with grassroots efforts, and then we basically set up an account and maintain a fund for them. We're a holding account for them. A classic situation is Friends of Glasgow Park want to raise money. They're probably going to raise $50,000, maybe $100,000 to help build the park. It's crazy to incorporate and create yet another new nonprofit and go through all the filing headache and tax returns and all that. So modeled after some other foundations out in the West, we thought our role is just to hold the money until the project's ready to go forward. So these are the current balances in the different efforts.
As of December 31st, 2011.
So the second paper I'm going to give you is the amount of donations that came in to these different programs during the past year.
Calendar year.
So for example, you'll see the Poverty Will Fund. The new Registrar of Wills, Mr. Poverty, ran into a problem where indigent clients are coming in and they needed just a few $100 to engage an attorney to help them settle an estate. So he has raised some money and through payroll deduction is contributing some of his own salary. And what we'll do is we'll get a call asking if we can be supportive. Let's say Carol, for example, came in and I needed $400 to hire an attorney. Then Newcastle County Pride can provide that payment to the attorney so that indigent person can have representation when they go through their estate. Some of the other funds you're familiar with, the park funds, historic preservation. I'm going to ask Alex to talk just a little about some of the things that we purchased during the year, this past year. Alex?
One of the most active programs this year from a fundraising but also a acquiring standpoint was the Friends of the Mounted Police. They had a very aggressive fundraising campaign, and through their efforts in raising money and our ability to spend it, as they would likely bought a shed for one of the houses, or for one of the horses, I'm sorry, a new shed, a new horse for the Mounted Police, I believe his name is Mick, and just recently we completed the purchase of all new saddles and tack for the Mounted Police unit. So that was through their fundraising, you know, as well. And our other programs that we've been working with Jane and her staff throughout the years, of course, have been the Holiday Open House, Platinum Picnic, cover everything from cookies to Santa to
speakers
to any other items that may be needed. And then, of course, the other, what I would call larger program, ongoing program, is the Love Your Library campaign for the county libraries. And over the past year, memory serves me correctly, bought over $20,000 worth of library books, supplies, computer software programs, pretty much anything the libraries have requested through their individual accounts. We've been able to purchase for the county libraries through the programs.
To date, Newcastle County Pride has brought in about $650,000 that is going directly to services and efforts in Newcastle County. I must say I'm surprised. I told Alex when I recruited him for the board, that $15,000-$20,000 a year, I don't see it, you know, really launching. It'll take a few years to get going.
We did $450,000 last year.
Yeah. Two of our biggest programs have been grants that we did. We did a Rewire to Hire, where we worked with community services to put on hundreds and hundreds of workshops to help people prepare for the new economy, resume, interviewing techniques, dressing, and employment fairs. There was an employment fair at Rockwood. There were 17, 18 employers that were there that day. And the place was mobbed with job seekers already, resumes, prep for interview questions. And so we've just gotten, there's a copy of the program for that. We've just gotten another additional money for that program so we can keep it going longer. And we run that through the libraries. because there's such a stigma. This is what we found working with the Department of Labor. There's a real stigma from folks going into the unemployment office. And so the library was seen as a very safe place to put on this type of workshop. Nobody knows why you're going in the library. They don't know that you're unemployed. They don't know that you're between jobs. So partnering with the county library system, I think, has, one, made it very accessible throughout the county, and two, has made it a palatable experience for folks who are at a difficult point in their life professionally. I mean, you or I could find ourselves in that same spot if our company went out of business. And so I think that providing a service that has not come to you for any budget support is also a plus. So your name, as you see, is all over the program. So I think we're making sure that the county gets credit for being a significant partner in opening up your spaces and venues for us. And Councilman, anticipating your question, these workshops were throughout northern and southern Newcastle County. They did a nice job, I think, with placement. So, and then finally, we have a website up now, and in order to make people more familiar with what we do and add to our transparency, beginning this January, we're going to start putting our tax return up on the website. So if folks want to know, where's the money go, who's in charge of this, as soon as this year's taxes are filed, they're going to be filed on the website. So any citizen can go up and say, how hard is it to find out what they're doing? I also anticipate that we'll be putting up these balances. We won't be updating them, you know, month to month, but I think once a year people should be able to see what came into these programs and what programs are up there. So I'd expect in the next month, once we get the taxes up on the website, you'll see these two PDFs. Someone can take a look at that. So if you have anyone that wants to be supportive, send them to our way. The best place to reach me is at my office at Westchester Foundation, 610-436-2868. You can always get me there. My secretary knows where I am if I'm dodging phone calls, so she will track me down. So, Alex, anything that you can?
Thank you for your support.
Yeah,
seriously.
Councilman Weiner has a question.
Yes, thank you so much for what you do. I don't know what we would do without Newcastle County Pride, because it avoids the logistical and ethical challenges that we face all the time. Some of us earmark 5% of our salary for books and library. I mean, I'm just, you know, I know some of us do that. Does that go directly to the county budget, or does it go to Love Your Library?
It goes to Love Your Library.
Yeah, why don't you speak on that? Actually, I have one in my briefcase. We have a check come in, and we know where the money is supposed to be allocated. And, like, under Love Your Library, some of you donate to the library, some donate to the senior programs. You know, the money gets allocated to each account. And in the case of the libraries, it's each library has its own. There's a general library fund which can be used for any of the libraries in the county system. And each library has its own individual account. So say if you make your money is earmarked to a specific library, and then we hold it. And then a couple times, usually twice a year, it's been twice a year, Marlene and I resolved, you know, she asked me, okay, what do I have to spend? And she takes the available budgets, goes to the library managers, and says, we have this to spend. Mm-hmm. And they go out and the county procures, purchases, receives, and verifies that they receive the goods and services that they've mm-hmm. purchased. And what's fun for me is that I get to go pay the bill.
Mm-hmm. So I
pay the bill and then draw down on mm-hmm. each of those accounts.
So if any one of us wanted to know how the money was being spent that we donated,
I can give you exact who gave what for how much and what went out. Now, as far as the individual items from Baker and Taylor, which is usually that, I don't usually get as far as what the individual items are. We would have to.
It could certainly be
provided. I get an invoice with a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But the money was set up, in your case, for example, if it's Brandywine 100 Library,
mm-hmm.
they're told, here's the balance. Councilman Weiner's contributions are this much. We've gotten 45 checks in, so here's the gross that you have to spend. Mm-hmm. So there might be three library orders on that one book company's invoice.
Yeah, I'd just like to generally see how it's getting spent. Do you have a number or an email address or something?
Sure. Yeah, I can give you my card.
Could you just please state your name for the record, please?
My name is Alex Meitzler, M-E-I-T-Z-L-E-R.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions from members of council? Seeing none, is there any questions from any member of the public? Nancy?
Hi. Rich, I guess I tried to talk to
Nancy, you want to state your name, please?
Nancy Willing from there. I did call Rich at his Westchester Foundation several years ago. You were very involved with a new child in the home. I didn't have a whole lot of time to talk, but my concern then was about who does put in the money, where is it coming from, and there wasn't any transparency at that time. It doesn't sound like this.
Well, in a private foundation, donor contributions are protected. There is no IRS requirement to publish those names, and many donors do not want their name published.
Correct.
So in that case, on the tax return, the IRS does require, if you have certain level of donations above $5,000, for example, those names have to be disclosed. So if we crest that mark, those names are in the tax return. But we don't publish a list of donors anywhere.
Well, once you're getting above $5,000, those people will have to be...
We have to list it on our tax return.
Yeah.
And also, it's disheartening to see historic preservation at zero. Is that because there is no facility like a Friends of group? Who set up the historic preservation fund?
The historic preservation was originally awards, wasn't it?
It was an awards. Go ahead.
I think it was for an award program we did 2 years ago. So that was laying there, that name of that account. The Friends of Rockwood, I think, are at a point where, as part of the capital review process with the county, they'd love to make all kinds of improvements there. If the Friends of Rockwood want to set up an account, I would not lump it under historic preservation. They would create their own account for just the renovation at Rockwood. So, did I get it right?
Kristen Doyer, Executive Office, just to go on his point, the historic preservation awards were held under the Coombs administration, and it was the focus of the board not to do them last year, and they're hoping to do them again this year. But they have not contacted the Executive Office on a timetable.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes, what's the website address?
nccpride.org, I think. Yeah.
Is it up and running?
Oh, yeah.
If you Google it, it should come up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
I'm sorry. Other? Thank you, Rich.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Anything on the other? Public comment. Any further public comment? Now,
I'll renew my motion to adjourn.
I know you have
to. All right,
I have
a card from the floor. All in favor.
Aye.